This is Sid Roth saying, I have a vision. Now is the set time to blow the trumpet in Zion.
Blow the trumpet in Zion, sound it on the mountains. Blow the trumpet in Zion, for the day of the Lord is come.
Shalom, Mishpacha. Shalom, family. Mishpacha is a Hebrew word. It means family. And we're the Mishpacha, the family with a Jewish heart, made up of Jewish and non-Jewish people that are one new man in Messiah Yeshua, Messiah Jesus. Getting ready, Mishpacha, to blow the grandest shofar, or the grandest trumpet in Zion. We want everyone, everywhere, to hear the good news. We want everyone, everywhere, to be red hot for the Messiah. My guest by way of telephone is Dr. John Garr. We'll be talking this week about his book, Restoring Our Lost Legacy. And let me read from the back of the book. We've been robbed. These words of a Methodist bishop in Brazil, an Anglican leader in India, and a Pentecostal overseer in Africa expressed the sentiments of thousands of Christians around the world when they first discovered, through the challenging teaching of Dr. John Garr, the extent to which they have been deprived of the Hebrew heritage of their Christian faith. For the past 19 centuries, millions of believers have been denied their biblical legacy, the riches of the Hebrew foundations of their faith. Christian Judeophobia, anti-Judaism, and anti-Semitism have conspired to rob them of the treasures of their inheritance. I have to tell you, John, a lot of information in your book I was aware of, but you've put it together in such a wonderful fashion, and you have information in here that I was not aware of. It's been so helpful, but I have to start out with the question that I've posed to myself so many times. How did something that started in a Jewish land, Israel, by Jewish people, based on the Jewish scriptures and the Jewish Messiah and the Jewish blood of atonement and the Jewish festivals become the opposite of Judaism as we know it today? How did that happen?
Well, I think we've not only have the $64,000 question, we've probably got the $64 billion question. How could it have been possible?
I mean, is it what I just read from the back of your book? We've been robbed?
We have been robbed, and it's basically all you can say is it's been a conspiracy of the powers of evil that has been worked out very deceptively in the history of the Christian church. I don't think we have to go back and question the motives of many of the Hellenic and Latin fathers of the church, the Greek and Latin fathers of the church, in their efforts to contextualize the gospel into the societies in which they live. But the problem is that they, in the effort to contextualize, they crossed across the line into syncretism and started to try to blend Greek philosophy and, in some cases, the Greek polytheistic system with the Hebraic faith of Jesus and the apostles.
Now, weren't they afraid to do this? I mean, you know, God is there.
You know, a lot of question about that, and I think that they should have certainly been afraid of it. They should have been very careful that they would maintain the purity of the faith of Jesus and the apostles. But again, I think that they were making an effort to try to contextualize. But we do know that certain of the Greek fathers, in particular Origen and Tertullian, started out with an effort to syncretize or blend together Neoplatonist philosophy. Of course, they were both Neoplatonist philosophers. And to take that philosophy of the Greek world and blend it with the earliest Christian faith. And, of course, when you know something about the history of both of them, they're like oil and water. They just don't mix.
Yeah, yes, but some of the apostles and the disciples of the apostles must have fought this ferociously. I would have had I been there.
And we, in the history of the records we have, they were continuing battles over many of these issues up through the first four centuries of the church in particular. But once we got up to the fourth and fifth centuries, the process had been pretty much completed. The church had become Hellenized and then subsequently Latinized, so that the pure faith of Jesus and the apostles was pretty much lost. And, of course, this is one reason for the Reformation in the 16th century and the Counter-Reformation that was also taking place within the Roman Catholic Church at the same time was an effort, at least, to begin a step toward restoration and renewal in that reformative process. But the reality is we were in a terrible, terrible state that was far removed from the faith of Jesus and the apostles because, as you have so well said, it was a Jewish faith. Christianity, in its beginning as the early Jesus movement, was not even thought of as being Christianity at all. It was just another group within Judaism that was attempting to make their views normative, as a matter of fact.
But wait a second. In the New Testament, it refers to believers in Jesus as Christians.
Well, the statements made, they were first called Christians at Antioch, and this was about 10 years after the ascension of Jesus, and was first used as a term of derision from people outside the movement. The earliest term that we can arrive at, that we can understand, is they probably were called the Notzrim, after the Hebrew word netzer, which means the root, and Jesus was the stem and the shaft of Jesse. And so they were patterning themselves after that way, so that they were actually trying to manifest the life of Jesus, and they were being identified with that. But by the time you come to Antioch, in the Greek language, they were called Christians because they were seemed to be followers of Christ in this new strange religion that was being promoted from the outside. So they were called Christians. And
but as you point out in your book, it was actually in a derogatory sense, the name Christian.
The origination of the term was derogatory, but as we know, terms that are used as terms of derogation over a period of time can be adopted by the people to whom the name applies. For instance, the Friends movement came to be called the Quakers because of the experience that they manifest, and the people outside started calling them Quakers, and eventually they assumed that title to themselves. Another one that's a good example is the term Jew. Originally, the term Jew was used by the people outside the society of Judah as a term of derision, and it became adopted as the term for describing the people from the tribe of Judah, and subsequently from all the tribes of Israel that came to be associated in a line within the tribe of Judah, so that they all became described as Jews. So, you know, this is not an uncommon phenomenon, but the point is, originally they were not called Christians. Jesus was never called a Christian. Jesus was only called a Jew. The people who identified him, who were outside the scope of the community of Israel, all identified him as being a Jew. The woman at the well of Samaria said, "You are a Jew." And when Pilate came to the point of crucifying him, he had a legal inscription nailed on the top of the cross: "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews."
Yeah, it reminds me of a book by Francis Schaeffer's wife, Edith Schaeffer, written many years ago, called "Christianity is Jewish."
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, when you get back to it, you have to acknowledge historically and theologically that Christianity is a Jewish faith.
So do you believe that God never intended to say, have Old Covenant Judaism and Christianity, but just had Judaism?
I think that was God's intention all along. And, in effect, what Jesus came to do was to restore Judaism to its original inherent ideal. As a matter of fact, Martin Buber made a statement that I think is very important. Martin Buber is one of the great Jewish philosophers of our times, and he said that the earliest Jewish movement was a radical call to doing Torah, or in other words, doing what the Word of God says. So in effect, it was not an effort to break away from the biblical and or Second Temple Judaism into which Jesus and the apostles were born and lived their lives, but it was rather an attempt to show that Jesus was the fulfillment, and in him came forth the fullest flower of understanding of the Jewish teaching from the Hebrew Scriptures, and also to cause the world, and particularly at that time, the rest of their fellow Jewish community, to recognize their understanding and belief that in Jesus was the fullness of all the Scriptures had to say about the Messiah.
Maybe that's what Paul meant when he said that the believers are to provoke the Jewish people to jealousy. You just don't provoke a Jewish believer to jealousy by saying, you too can have Easter bunnies and Easter eggs.
Well, that's absolutely true. The jealousy element, you know, if we're looking at that, one is not jealous of something that one does not possess. And what you're jealous of is if someone else is using what you think is exclusively yours, then you're jealous. So obviously the Christian community, as one Jewish person made the statement to me, talk about our being jealous of Christians. Well, frankly, Christians don't have anything we want. And the reason for that is because they don't recognize anything in the traditional Christian model or the Christian church that they can identify as being Jewish. And again, that's one of the great, the problems, I think, in relational things between the traditional Jewish community and the Christian church, is because the Christian church has drifted so far from its original and inherent ideal as being a Jewish faith established by a Jewish Lord on the basis of a Jewish book teaching about the God of the Jews and being established in the land of the Jews, that the Jews can't even see anything that identifies Christianity that it's even related to them.
It's one thing that we see how the Greco-Roman culture infiltrated the early church, but it's a totally another thing that's mind-blowing is how the Christian church today is so, not even intentionally, but by its very nature, anti-anything that's Jewish. If Jewish people worship on Saturday, we worship on Sunday. Jewish people have put their hats on in the synagogue, we take our hats off in the church. How did that kind of tension occur?
Well, it's basically as Christianity began to go into the Gentile world, and there was a lot of persecution in that time frame. And one of the things that the leaders in the third and fourth centuries began to do was to distance themselves from Jews and from Judaism, just
Why?
For the sake of trying to keep themselves from being persecuted. They wanted to be recognized within their communities and be accepted among them, and so they started distancing themselves. So from that dynamic, Christianity came to define itself as being, quote, not Jewish. By the same token, Judaism, in turn, began to define itself as being not Christian. So our definition, our self-definition, in both communities, has been based more on negatives than it has been on positives, and especially in the Christian community.
You know, the definition, this is mind-blowing to me. Definition of being Jewish is something you're not, not something you are. Definition of being Jewish is you don't believe in Jesus.
Mm-hmm, right.
I mean, come on now, give me a break. You're throwing out so many questions. If it wasn't for the fact that God has called Gentiles to provoke Jewish people to jealousy, salvation, in Romans 11:11, salvation has come to the Gentile to provoke the Jew to jealousy, even forgetting that, all the richness that the church has lost in the understanding of the new covenant by not understanding our biblical Judaic roots. That's why you really need this book, Restoring Our Lost Legacy, by Dr. John Garr. We're making it available this week for $20 postage paid. Call or write today. If you would like to receive a complimentary copy of our bi-monthly teaching newsletter, materials catalog, or information about becoming Mishpucha, write to me, Sid Roth, Post Office Box 1918, Brunswick, Georgia, 31521. Or call our order-only line, 1-800-548-1918. To place a credit card order, call anytime the same number, 1-800-548-1918. For all other calls, the number is 912-265-2500. That's 912-265-2500. For a cassette tape of this week's broadcast, send $5 to Sid Roth, Post Office Box 1918, Brunswick, Georgia, 31521. To see our television show, It's Supernatural, and to listen to our past radio programs, look us up on the web at www.sidroth.org. That's www.sidroth.org.
prophet in Zion.